You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome back to the Tattoo Shop. It's been a while. I run another basketball podcast, and the NBA Finals was happening. So that took me a little bit away. That took me away from this a little bit. I am your host, JC DeLeon. With me, as always, good friend and tattoo artist Michael Williams,
hey,
aka Bearded Gentleman on Instagram. And our special guest for this episode, OneOfUs.net listeners know him as Dr. Nerdlove. We've got Harris O'Malley.
Hey, everybody.
Harris, yeah, as I mentioned, Dr. Nerdlove. You can. It's on Gawker or.
I write an advice column every 2 weeks on Kotaku called Ask Dr. Nerdlove, and there's always my site, just drnerdlove.com.
Yeah.
Spell the whole thing out, Dr. or DR, taking it to the same place.
Cool. So, yeah, if you follow Dr. Nerdlove on Twitter, you've never met him in person, maybe you might be wondering why he's on this podcast. He is actually a heavily tattooed individual. He's got an entire right sleeve, which is very cool. And a number of other tattoos. So, perfect guest for this podcast. How did you kind of get into tattooing? Or
like almost everybody else who's gotten into it, I got one and said that was going to be it. I was living in Florida at the time. This was in late 1999, early 2000. And I was going to a school there called Full Sail, which is, for all intents and purposes, a tech school for the entertainment industry. And at the time, I was, you know, living dreams of trying to be a professional artist and animator and whatnot, and I was studying computer animation. And I wanted to get a tattoo for a while. In fact, when I was 13 and 14 in a summer program, I actually went and tried to get a wolf's head tattooed on my palm. Fortunately, nobody at the tattoo parlor would actually take me seriously.
For your first tattoo, you wanted it on your palm?
On my palm when I was 14. At a summer program. So, yeah, they all kind of looked at me and was like, oh, you're cute, kid, get out.
What would have been your reaction to?
I haven't had anybody that young come in a while. I definitely probably would have been a little shocked, entertained.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get that passed, but the idea of getting a tattoo always kind of stuck with me. And when I was in Florida, I decided, all right, this is as good a time for it as any. And I did a little bit of research, not quite as much as I should have, and got what at the time was my studio logo tattooed onto my left shoulder. And looking back on it, I would have made a number of different design decisions because it was Celtic knotwork, and a lot of it is very tiny and fiddly detail, which over time has, you know, blurred and warped a little bit because the artist I went to was not that great, and small, fine detail was not within his bailiwick, so, yeah. But at the time, I said, all right, cool, that's awesome, I've got my tattoo, I'm done. And then I moved to Austin, and that went out the window pretty damn fast.
Yeah. Yeah, when I got my first tattoo from Michael, I hadn't gotten a tattoo in almost 3 years, and I kind of told him my routine was, when I find a design I like, I kind of give myself a clock of a year or longer to see if I still want it. And so he didn't expect to see me back for a year. And it was almost a year, but I do kind of hit him up all the time. Being like, hey, man, I think I kind of want this design. And so, yeah, it definitely becomes addictive. That does lead me to a question. Probably a lot of people have similar stories in that they did maybe some research or maybe no research. How often would you say you get people who come in for the very first tattoo who've like done a good amount of research? I'd imagine most of them are referrals.
You know, I would say now more days, like just the typical like walk in, like they've not been like referred to the shop, like, you know, they get online, they look at Google, they look at Yelp, they read reviews. You know, maybe they know what to look for, maybe they don't know what to look for, but definitely, like, you know, reviews and good positive things heard about the shop is always positive. You know, some of them come in and there's just so much available on the internet. I mean, there's so many tattooers. You can check out their work. There's so many pages on Instagram and Twitter that have, like, you know, really nice, good tattoos that they post every day that gives you a lot of inspiration, give you a lot of different options as to what a good tattoo could look like. So I feel like a lot of the people really have a better understanding of what is possible. But at the same time, it does give them a lot of options, and some of the stuff that people post isn't necessarily doable. So it definitely kind of clouds, I think, like the decisions that they can make at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. And so, Harris, as your the tattoos that you had done on yourself evolved, I noticed you were really into koi. And that seems to be a really popular design because it seems like really easy to customize, tons of colors. They always look great on people, and yours look fantastic.
Yeah, I've got primarily, just through a sheer amount of attrition over the years, most of my tattoos are Irezumi style. When I first started, like I said, I was going with Celtic. When I got here, the first tattoo I got in Austin was a Cambodian design. It was a carving on a temple in Angkor Wat that I took a photo of that I really liked, and had that as a pair of dueling parrots that I had tattooed on my back. And from there is when I really finally thought, okay, I've always loved Japanese tattoos. I love the artistry behind it. I really like the symbology behind it. I love how sleeves look, and started doing my research into who in town does a lot of, like, really good Japanese work, and I got my first serious sleeve, or at least started it, which was a dragon half sleeve that I got done. It's on my right arm that I got done at a tattoo parlor that is sadly no longer with us anymore, called Body Adorned. And from there, that was also where I learned my second most important rule of getting tattoos done. When your tattoo artist is telling you that he can do a better design than the one that you've handed him, listen to him. Because that's how I ended up with the only tattoo I have that I kind of regret, which is a Fu Lion on my left shoulder blade, which I was really determined was going to be my art style and my art. And unfortunately, I'm not that good of an artist. So, I was very headstrong into it. I was like, no, I want it to be like this. And, Brad, bless his heart, said, okay, well, you asked for it, and gave me exactly what I asked for.
Yeah, I think I talked about that last time, where the one I have on my calf, it wasn't the best situation that I didn't really establish a rapport with the artist. I met him at the Apple store that I worked at. And that was really kind of the extent. There's never a whole lot of back and forth. And I just kind of walked in one day and gave him a piece of paper of a tribal lion. And he's like, yeah, I can do that. And he did it. And it's kind of, I'm looking at it, and it's not a terrible tattoo. I do wish there was a little bit more of that, I don't want to say nurturing, but like just kind of coaxing or like, adjusting or just kind of, helping adapt to my personality or what he knows about me. Like, whatever my next tattoo I get from Michael, like we've been kind of hashing it out for months, like trying to decide like what it is, where it's going to go, and sort of all that. And so, yeah, that's definitely the way to go, is just to listen to your artist, because he's similar to a doctor. He's kind of got your best interest in mind.
Yeah. So yeah, that was something hard to learn, and eventually at some point I'm going to go and have it lasered enough that I can get it covered over and redone.
Yeah, my very first one, I kind of want to have covered up, and then the one on the left, my left calf. The only reason why I wouldn't do the calf is because it's a lot more painful spot than I realized.
Yeah, I've had several friends tell me, never get into a fight. They do M&A, and they would say, never get into a fight with someone who's got tattoos on his shins and calves, because they don't feel pain.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, Michael, what have you kind of worked on lately? It's been a while since our last episode, so I'm sure you've done a ton of pieces. Anything?
Man, I've been staying busy doing art, doing tattoos, building tattoo machines. But we were talking earlier, I guess like one of the biggest projects I've been working on is the Twin Peaks sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friend Jake, it's his first tattoo, and he's just going full out. We got Agent Dale Cooper, couple of the other characters I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Some nice background of tall trees and mountains.
So that's like the second or third person in the last couple of months. When I walked in, the last time I walked in the shop, because you can kind of trace out the spots of my arm, you were doing the pie on that woman.
Yeah, we did the pie and the cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how, I guess a percentage is sort of a hard thing to guesstimate, but I mean, how often would people come in, want to have nerdy tattoos? Like, you've done a really cool Deadpool one.
Oh, I mean, nerdy tattoos, like, plenty of them. I mean, I've done everything from, like, Star Wars, Star Trek, MC Chris, Twin Peaks, you name it. Terminator, Deadpool, down with all those.
Nice. Do you have anything like that, or is it all just kind of stuff that you...
The one nerdy tattoo I have, because most of them I went with the Irizumi design, and I started off with my dragon, and then on my other arm I got a turtle, which I actually had wrapped. Now the shell kind of encompasses my first tattoo, since I didn't want to necessarily erase that part of my life. But the other one that I did is on my left forearm, which it's what I call my stealth nerd tattoo, because it's the 63rd hexagram from the I Ching, which means after completion that order always falls back to chaos if you don't maintain it. There's always more to learn. There's always more to do. It's also the mark of the Arashikage ninja clan from G.I. Joe.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it's Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow both have this tattoo.
Yeah.
So that's one that I kind of, I always like it whenever I'm hanging out with people and then they kind of notice it and bring up. It's like, is that? It's like, yup.
Nice. Yeah, I've struggled with, I definitely like the idea of putting a nerd tattoo, but I'm mostly into, like, my last name being Deliana, I'm mostly into lions. And big cats in general, and in sort of the empty spaces, there's a lot of shapes I'm exploring, like Penrose triangles and things like that. I think that stuff is really cool, especially the optical illusion 3D-ness of it. Comic book properties that I'm into, like, I would maybe get a Batman or a Spider-Man tattoo, but figuring out where it fits is sort of a struggle. But yeah, that's sort of something I'm looking into. Yeah. So, do you have any on yourself? Any nerdy tattoos on yourself? Or?
I've got a Atari joystick controller. I think that's probably a pretty good nerdy tattoo.
Yeah.
definitely my very first game system. Definitely spawned a love for video games. Went from that to the Nintendo, and then into a couple computer systems like Commodore 64 and 128.
Oh God, I loved my Commodore 64 growing up.
And I had like the first, I guess, portable-ish one. Like, it was like a laptop, basically, but it was the size of a suitcase, and the front of it came off, and that was a keyboard, and it had maybe like a 3 or 4 inch screen on it with a 5 and a quarter inch floppy disk drive.
Yeah.
Crazy. Screen was smaller than the disk drive.
So, speaking of some of those old consoles, have you guys seen some of the old consoles are coming back in mini form?
I have.
Yeah, I've seen the new mini NES or whatever it is they're calling, and yeah. I can't decide if I'm excited for that or not.
Since the Sega one was announced, I think the Sega one was announced in two versions, like a plug-in TV and then like a portable version, kind of, I guess, like the old Game Gear. It seems like the Nintendo one has a really short controller, so you're kind of tethered to the TV, which, I mean, nowadays it seems like it might be kind of a turn-off to people, but... If the Sega one has, like, either longer or wireless controllers, that's probably the way to go. But, yeah, I'm definitely excited by the prospect of revisiting my childhood.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on those. So we have, like, the Nintendo. Can we put actual Nintendo cartridges in it?
No.
No, it's too small. It's a hard, it's a, like, solid-state drive, I believe.
Yeah.
So the Sega downfall one, of that is you can't do that. But it does have all the auto game save features. It does HDTV. Now, the Genesis, what is... strange to me is maybe about a year or two ago, you could buy one of those already that had like a bunch of video games on it.
Yeah, it's the same. The one that got announced, the same one, it's just been given the Sonic 25th anniversary like logo on it.
So it can do all that. It can save games. It's not HDMI. It comes with two controllers, but you can put any cartridge in it. Can't they just put those two together? Can it be HDTV, save the game, have a bunch of stuff, but also accept cartridges and be wireless?
Yeah.
There are a couple that are kind of like that, like called the retro stations or whatnot. You can get them at like Game Over Games and whatnot, where you can put all, depending on which one you get, you can put Nintendo, Sega Genesis, and then some of them you can put like all the way up to like Game Boy Advance and Game Boy Color games in them. Yeah. And they can upscale and they have wireless control, but you have to have the cartridges for it. Part of what I like about the mini NES is that they're all ROMs on the thing. Yeah. I just don't like the fact that you can't add anything to it, that it's a closed system.
Yeah.
I would assume that you'll be able to hack it, put in a bigger hard drive, upload a ton of ROMs. So that's like one maybe positive. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
It would be nice if you had like a cartridge and you could have a cartridge with like a memory card in it.
Yeah, or do one of the old 50-in-1 cartridges that like people used to bring back from Japan and China.
Yeah, I had one from my Game Boy, and just downloaded like pretty much every Game Boy ROM and was able to just put it on there like 10 to 20 games at a time.
That's the thing that wows, that kind of is crazy about those games. Like nowadays, when things are gigabytes and terabytes big, those games are kilobytes. They're tiny. So it's tiny. Crazy. Yeah.
They're like marvels of just really efficient programming because they had to make everything fit on these tiny little cards.
Yeah. I remember even a few years ago on the Nintendo Wii when you could download, I guess, the ROM versions of like Super Mario, and a friend of mine put it on like his 50-inch TV and had it take up the entire screen. I was like, this is amazing. It was still the blocky 8-bit, but seeing it that big, it was just like, oh man, this is cool.
Yeah.
Like I've never seen it that big and that clear, even though it was still in the 8-bit form.
Some of what always kind of really impressed me, especially when we got into like the Sega Genesis era, is the music of the games, because not only did they have to create memorable or music with just chiptunes, only what was available on, you know, they could make the synthesizer on the board sound like, they had to do it in a way that you could play it over and over again that you wouldn't get bored or hate it before it was over with. So instead, now we've all, you know, everybody's got that. Of everyone of a certain age, we've all got that instinctive reaction when we hear the Legend of Zelda music or the Super Mario theme.
Yeah.
We can just like hum that for hours.
It's one of those things. Yeah, to this day, still don't get tired of that music. Still kind of get a little kick in my step when I hear that. It's just kind of it's cool seeing that stuff kind of come back. But yeah, there are definitely improvements that need to be made to that sort of thing. So Comic-Con recently also just happened, and I don't know if it was different this year, but it seemed like they weren't wasting any time in releasing the trailers and things like that. I thought that was a nice change of pace, because I've never been to a Comic-Con, and I totally wasn't expecting Saturday morning to be sitting there watching the new Justice League trailer. Did you guys see those trailers?
Yeah. I think they got tired of everybody just camming the trailers while they were in Hall H and putting them on YouTube, so they decided to do it themselves.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed out that they didn't release the Guardians footage, because everybody said little tiny baby Groot is adorable.
There's that, and then there's the fact that Kurt Russell is playing Ego the Living Planet.
Yeah.
And first of all, that's a deep cut for Marvel. But also, just there is a scene it's supposed to be in the trailer where Drax is interrogating Ego about how he's Star-Lord's dad, and there's actually a moment where Ego has to tell Drax, like, "Yes, Drax, I have a penis." I want to see this.
Yeah,
I want to see this in the worst way.
Makes sense. So, what did we think of the trailers that we did see? So we're fresh off of Batman vs. Superman, which, I mean, I happen to like, and I've seen the 3-hour cut, and I still like it, but I mostly like it because I got a fairly kick-ass Batman, which is what I wanted.
So is there an improvement in the 3-hour cut?
Certain things are more fleshed out. Superman's intro is a lot cooler. Like, rather than just having him crash through the roof, you see a little bit more thought into what the government was planning, or like trying to fire a missile at the place, knowing Lois is there and Superman kind of stops the missile. Like that is a cool, better way to introduce him, even though he was in the previous movie. But like to see him for the first time in that movie at a moment like that,
like saving doing a Superman thing.
Yeah, doing a Superman thing, not just crashing through a wall and killing a dude. things like that overall, it was improved. There's some stuff at the end that was happening on the alien ship that I'm guessing are going to be more explained in the Justice League sequel, but I mean, overall, it's an improvement. I think, I mean, for people that are never going to get over the Martha thing, like, that's not going to be improved.
Thank God the moms had the same name.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way to really fix that. But I mean, you know, overall, and if you've got the time to sit down for a 3-hour movie, because it's a legit 3 hours and 5 minutes.
I'm definitely curious to check it out.
Yeah. But yeah, so refresh off of that, and the Justice League trailer looks to be a complete 180 in terms of tone. Is that...
It's quippier, I'll give it that,
yeah.
Because it starts off with Batman going to this tiny Alaska town looking for Aquaman, and who, you know, with Jason Momoa, who is looking damn good as Aquaman, like, giving Aquaman an edge that the character never had, but at the same time, then it cuts back to him, cuts back to, you know, Bruce Wayne in the Batcave with Gal Gadot and saying, so, did he say you fuck with us? More or less.
Yeah.
More or less. He said no, didn't he? He said no.
Yeah.
I like the sequence with the Flash. I really like that one a lot, the introduction of the two characters, him and Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, in that little bit, I didn't think I'd like Ezra Miller at all, just because everything I've seen him in, he's super skinny, has a really skinny face. Like, I just didn't like really anything about his look that, as far as making him a superhero, especially the Flash. Especially since I like, I don't remember the actor's name, but the CW
Grant
Flash.
Gustin.
Yeah, the CW Flash is great.
That's my problem with it, is that they didn't get Grant Gustin to be the Flash, because I really like his Flash. I like his costume, I like his character, I like the way that he is, you know, he's a superhero, but not only does he love being a superhero, but he owes a lot of it to his friends. He's not just the, you know, the tortured loner. And the idea that this Barry Allen is, you know, just another dude who has no friends and he's obsessed with computers, I'm not crazy about that characterization.
Yeah, and I think it would have been a really cool surprise if after all these years, DC was like, hey, guess what? Those TV shows y'all love? Part of the same universe. Like, that would be really cool. It's something that I feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has abandoned. Like, I know it's in the same universe, and I know one of the episodes in the first season takes place, like, the day after the events of Thor, The Dark World. And then after that, it just sort of isn't really the same universe anymore.
From what I understand, there was a pretty heavy line made between the movies and the TV shows. And I think it had a lot to do with whoever was in charge of the entire universe. And then finally, now that he's gone, there may be more integration.
Yeah.
But that's, like, one of the reasons why with all the Netflix shows...
Yeah, those seem to be tied in.
Yeah. Like, they don't even mention characters by name. They'll say, like, you know, the guy with the hammer or the big green guy, but they won't even say, like, the Hulk, even though they'll have newspapers in the background that say, you know, Stark Tower, blah, 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 or, mm-hmm. you know, Steve Rogers says something or other. Speaking of which, they debuted the Luke Cage trailer for that, and oh, damn, that looks awesome!
That looks so good. Just a little bit that we've seen of his powers in Jessica Jones. I didn't really know everything he was fully capable of, and it's a damn good trailer. I liked it more than Iron Fist, because I feel it's great that I think the Luke Cage trailer showed as much as it did, but we've seen a little bit of what he's capable of in Jessica Jones. I think with the Iron Fist, they should have showed a little bit more of what he's capable of, because we don't know that character at all, if you're not familiar with the comics, which I'm not 100% familiar with that guy. So that trailer didn't do it as much for me.
Yeah. And then there was the Defenders teaser, which told us absolutely nothing other than who was going to be in it.
Yeah. tying it back to Nerdy Tattoos, though, with shows like this and people becoming more and more exposed to characters like this, do you find people kind of walk in like, I want a Luke Cage tattoo, even though you haven't seen that in like years or anything? Any surprising characters that people really love getting tattooed on themselves?
Yeah, you know, I'd have to think about that one. I'm sure I've done something like...
People love like BB-8.
I think I've definitely done some stuff that's probably been like a little like less popular, but I think people always like stick with the classics, man. Superman, Batman, you know, even like Predator, Aliens, Transformers are always popular.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people come in and get some Thundercats or He-Man or something like that, but... You know, it's usually like the classics, never like some... Deadpool is not new, but once that movie came out, that definitely became like a really hot thing real quick.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of tattoos like that, and just searching the hashtag on Instagram, Deadpool tattoo.
So did that turn into some weird like fourth wall tattoo breaking thing? Does Deadpool comments on people's other tattoos?
You know, I'm sure there's probably somebody out there who's like thought of doing something like that. Like the one that I did, which was him with the drawing, the crude cartoon drawing of Francis. So,
yeah,
you know, that was definitely like one of my favorite parts of the movie. I thought that was really really funny. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's done something really creative with it.
Yeah, of a creative type of cover up like that. I've seen it was I think it was like a really old or amateurish Pikachu tattoo. And then the cover-up was, like, him painting, like, being a legit painter, and, like, that was what he was covering up.
They're like, I was really into Pokemon, and now I'm like really into Deadpool, so it's like, make them go together.
Yeah. It's an upgrade. And I read, there are a couple of tattoo magazines I read regularly, because whenever, especially whenever I'm starting to get the itch for a new tattoo and I want to figure out the design, I start looking at stuff like, well, there's Inked Magazine, there's just Tattoo, and there's, like, our local Barnes & Noble get a whole bunch of imported tattoo magazines. And whenever there's a feature on realistic portraiture, there's almost always at least two or three Heath Ledger Jokers.
Yeah.
That guy was a good Joker.
But that, there's something about his, you know, craggy makeup in that just, for people who do photorealism, really seems to inspire them.
Yeah. So, that's actually, yeah, a good question. So, when you're looking for inspiration, like, you look into books and things like that and kind of, okay. I always just, I go to Instagram and search, like, hashtags of things that I like, and sometimes I get updated a lot, sometimes I don't. Yeah, that's actually, I should look into magazines and books and things like that for more. But I find with that, I guess that's kind of more of a working with the client. Like, you kind of sort of change whatever it is that they bring in. If they were, like, bringing a book saying, I want this exact thing.
I mean, pretty much whether it's a book or something off of Pinterest or something off of somebody's Instagram or a picture of a tattoo that they saw out and about, like, I won't say that it happens as much anymore, but there was a while where people came in like, I want this. And you're like, hey, you know, let's change up a little bit. No, I really like this. I'm like, I'm sure the person who came up with that idea, who like really wanted that, maybe got that done custom, you know, maybe they like want it. And now you're just like kind of taking it. Like the infinity symbol with a word.
Right.
Like I'm sure somebody, like the whoever it is, that was the first person to come up with that, whether it was a client or the tattooer, good for you, man. Like you or lady, you made something that like really inspired a ton of people. Like, I don't know how many people have come in just wanting an infinity symbol with a name in it or some kind of different, like, inspirational word or maybe two names, maybe three, maybe, like, a whole entire infinity symbol made out of, like, a sentence. I don't know, but it's just crazy to think that it all started in one place. And
yeah.
Somebody saw it and it inspired, like, enough people that people are still coming in and getting it years later.
It's kind of like with the Penrose triangle. Like if you're not familiar, the Penrose triangle is sort of the 3D optical illusion that it's a twisting triangle, and you can't really tell where the twist starts and ends. And I'd seen it so much when I even texted you about it. Like, is this like a band or something? Like I kind of like this, but I don't want to get it if it's some kind of shitty band that I'm not aware of. And it's like, no, it's just a symbol that people like. And
well, so you take something like that, and I'm sure that was like some kind of ancient symbol that just has a visually appealing draw to it that makes people like want to get it tattooed and makes it like popular. And then I kind of like wonder about some of the designs, like that feather exploding into all the black birds. Was that a graphic design first, or did somebody design that and then a million people got it tattooed?
Yeah.
You know, that one person had that great idea, this feather exploding into a bunch of birds flying away, and now everybody's got their idea.
Yeah, it's kind of, because with the first one that you did, I mean, with that lion, like I like the way it looked so much, and you did kind of sort of make it a little different on your own, and I appreciate that now because I never looked at it from the point of view of, because I think the artist that did it, I ended up finding him on Instagram, and he makes a ton of really cool things that he never intended to be tattoos, but he's fully aware that people like tattoo them, and he's. I mean, it is what it is. He's not 100% on board with it, but he can't really do anything to stop it. And that sort of made me realize that from that point of view of the artist. Like, it's an image that someone came up with, and it's not technically theirs, but it sort of is at the same time.
I mean, it's hard to be a tattooer and do only, like, your own original work. It's also hard to take people's ideas and turn them into, like, really cool tattoos. And it's really hard to, you know, have somebody come in with an idea that they're dead set on, and they like want you to make it as close to somebody else's artwork, but try to convince them to let you change it. But it's like one of those things, you know, you are sitting there trying to think of a creative way of changing this design, and all you can think about is like everything that they don't want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not thinking about what can I do that'll make this good. You're thinking, okay, I can do all this except for this part and this part. Like it has to be somewhat similar.
Yeah.
It gets a little stressful sometimes.
Yeah. So shifting gears back to our guest a little bit, this is sort of an idea that just kind of popped in my head. So on the internet, on Kotaku, you're a relationship expert, and you come up with really interesting angles and topics and things like that, and you answer a ton of people's questions. We're in an election year. How do you, if someone approaches you with the question of, like, my significant other is an ardent Trump supporter, and I fucking hate that.
Double. Like, sorry, no quarter there. That this one's too important. That's supporting somebody who's going to actively destroy our country. If you can't break up with them, withhold sex until they change their vote, because, oh my God, this election's going to be consequential.
Okay, so maybe in an election year that isn't quite as contentious as this one, like how do you suggest sort of people sort of keep their politics separate,
if it gets to a point where you can't have a discussion and agree to disagree, then the best thing I found is to not bring it up at all. I mean, I am the liberal black sheep of my family. Everyone else in my family is conservative to one degree or another. And I have basically learned to just go kind of nod and smile and quietly change the subject to something else. And because otherwise it's going to turn into this long discussion between, like, financial conservatism versus social conservatism versus, you know, who's responsible for the current state of the economy to whatever. The only thing I'm grateful for this year is that everybody in my family and in my wife's family too, who are also pretty conservative, they're all kind of like, nope, not voting for Trump.
Yeah.
You know, in one case, you know, voting for Gary Johnson instead. Someone else is going to be writing in Ted Cruz, which honestly, it's not really that much better, but they're not on the ticket, so it's taking a vote away from them. But yeah, we do a lot of just like, okay, we don't agree on this. We're just going to talk about other things. So how about those movies? What about sports balls? Sports balls good.
Yeah. So yeah, just finding, I guess, not a common ground, but sort of, yeah, just not stoking the fires is the best way to sort of go about that.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of things that my wife and I disagree about, even pretty vehemently, but we're able to keep it more or less respectful, where it's like, okay, you know, we're going to respect that we, you know, we have this feeling about the topic versus, you know, your opinion about the topic, and, you know, we can discuss it, we can even arguing about it a little bit, but we also don't come at this from, like, you're a horrible person because you feel this way. And so we're able to have these discussions and really enjoy them to a certain extent, even if nothing, you know, we don't change each other's minds. It's when it becomes, I'm judging you as a person for the way that you believe, that's when it gets toxic and gets really painful.
Yeah, and there's not really any way to come back from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. all right, so, shifting gears again. kind of going back to, we've talked about tattoos and things like that. This is now sort of getting to the final segment of shooting the shit in the shop. Lately, I think some of the things that you guys, people have been talking about a lot on Twitter. I haven't seen the show yet, but I know you guys have. And earlier you talked about how much you liked it. People seem to be really into Stranger Things on Netflix.
Yeah, that is, that show is such a big sloppy kiss to the early 80s in just about every way. There's this great video on Vimeo that's a side-by-side comparison of all of the shots that are references to these other movies. Like, here's the shots that are very clearly inspired by E.T. Here are the shots that are shout-outs to Alien or to Poltergeist or to all these other things. And it's not done in a referential way or in a, hey, look at this, we loved this when we were in the 80s too. It's clearly being done by people who want to kind of pay homage to it. And
some of the artwork I've seen is sort of like a Drew Struzan type poster.
I mean, it feels like the Goonies in a lot of ways. It starts off a little bit Goonies, and then it goes straight Stephen King.
Nice. What have you thought of it? Have you been watching it?
You know, I heard like a lot of hype about it. Everybody's like, oh my God, this is so great. Like, if you're not checking it out, you're like missing out. And being a person who is from the 80s, somebody who enjoys a lot of stuff from the 80s, somebody who watches a ton of stuff that's homage to the 80s already and throwback, I mean, it's not really anything new to me. So I go into it, I was expecting it to just be something that was going to blow my mind. And I enjoyed it. I think it's good. I think it was done really well. I think they picked great actors. I think they acted well. It was interesting enough and it had enough, like, twist to it to kind of keep me interested. But I think because it was so overhyped, I was slightly disappointed because I didn't feel like it was anything that I haven't seen somebody already, like, do.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to, like, really, like, insult it or anything, but it's like, I've watched, like, a few movies about telekinesis. You know, I've seen movies about, you know, kids going on adventures and aliens and weird hauntings and stuff like that that are all kind of 80s throwback. So it didn't surprise me. I guess if somebody, like, didn't watch a lot of movies like that, then this might be something, like, really new and refreshing, you know, or more original than some of the shows that are on.
Yeah, I'm wondering how I'm going to feel, because I was born in 1981, and it was the almost second to last day of 1981, so for most intents and purposes, 1982. And so I was, you know, 8 years old by the time the 80s were over. And so my biggest reference points for the 80s is Goonies, E.T., and I love them. I don't have as much affinity for them as I do a lot of things from the 90s. And so, yeah, going into it, I'm wondering exactly how... I definitely appreciate and love E.T. Goonies, as I've gone back and rewatched, it doesn't hold up as great. E.T., I think, holds up a lot better. But, yeah, I'm interested in how I'm going to feel going into it. I'm definitely excited. I like a lot of the people involved. Yeah.
I was just telling somebody the other day, don't go into it, like, super excited, expecting something, like, new and original that's going to blow your mind. Just go into it, like, pretty open, and I think it'd be really enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I'm fairly easy to please.
I'm just finding it fascinating just now that, like, our generation has taken the reins of pop culture, how much we've started looking back at the 80s. And it's something that's cyclical. I mean, just not that long ago, I was watching American Graffiti for the first time, which is a big love letter to the 50s.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, we've got Stranger Things, which is, you know, so much of a love letter to the Goonies and all the rest of that. But we've also got the Ghostbusters reboot. And now, you know, Ecto Cooler is back.
Yeah.
And there's all, now they're making a movie off of Legend of the Forbidden Temple, a fucking game show off of Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, I had that thought the other day too. Like a lot of the stuff that I was into as a kid, and maybe that's the whole idea of it, is to make people around our age wish we were kids again, and to get people who are kids now into that sort of thing all over again. I don't remember what specific property it was, but I'm like, they're doing that as a kid. I would have loved that. As they're doing that again, I would have loved that as a kid. Even the Power Rangers, I tried to get into as a kid. I think I just missed the window when I would have been blown away by it. But the little bit that I've seen as far as in the artwork and things like that, it's like, this could be a really cool project.
Yeah, I was a Voltron kid. So by the time Power Rangers came around, I was just like, okay, so they're ripping off Voltron. Yay.
Yeah.
Now Voltron is back on Netflix and it's really good.
For a little bit of when Power Rangers first started, I was like way into it, but then it wasn't even that long. I just kind of grew weary of it. And I was like, I missed that window completely.
I think I was way too old to get into Power Rangers when it came out, but I was into it. And I went to that movie when it came out in the theaters, and I was probably the oldest person there, aside from the people who were taking their like little brothers and like their children to it. So yeah, me and my buddy were probably that probably came out like what, 94, maybe 96.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we're 14 to 16, and like, in the theater, like, watching this with, like, a bunch of kids.
And it's even, like, there's a new Harry Potter book coming out this weekend.
Yeah.
And I can't remember when the first ones came out, but, like, there are going to be a good number of kids buying this book who weren't even alive when Harry Potter first came out. And that's, like, that's...
Yeah, yeah. It's where, and the whole series takes place in, like, mid-90s at that, so...
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting, and I appreciate it because it's pandering, but it's pandering straight to me.
Yeah,
and we're about to really hit its apotheosis because Spielberg is directing Ready Player One, and that is nothing but just one 80s reference after another, culminating in a battle between Ultraman and Mecha Godzilla.
Yeah, one of my friends who writes for AnyCool.com was that the Kingsman 2 set in London, and they showed us the Ready Player One sets, but like, we can't talk about it.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah,
it was surprising.
Colin Firth is going to come back in it. I don't know exactly how they're going to pull that off, but I'm sure they'll find a way.
That movie is going down with the best use of Freebird in the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I don't know. Devil's Rejects. I can't get that image out of my head every time I hear Freebird.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. I guess I need to get on that.
Man, it is something you can't unsee. That whole movie is terrifying.
Nice.
Speaking of, you guys were talking about, you're talking about Harry Potter. Did anybody see Swiss Army Man?
I did.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
That one hit my, like, level of absurdity I was not really into, so I decided to skip it.
Say, there are a lot of farts in that movie.
Yeah.
And I felt very immature. I was laughing very loudly in the theater. I think everybody was laughing a little bit, but my wife and I were finding it very entertaining. I thought it was an interesting movie. It made me think about it a lot. It was enjoyable, pretty original. Visually, a great-looking movie.
Yeah, I love the music in it, the story, the way it evolved from just this simplicity of being, you know, fart jokes over and over again. I think it evolved into something a little smarter and sort of made you think a little bit. So you saw it. That's actually a good question, speaking of Swiss Army Man. So as a core issue of part of why that guy sort of isolated himself, because he couldn't gather up the courage to talk to that woman, like, what kind of advice would you have given him? Like, is it cool to approach a woman on a stranger on a bus like that and just be like that's the best way to sort of strike up a conversation? This could be info that helps me.
Yeah, it's gonna have to be a general, because I haven't seen the movie, but in general, you gotta be careful approaching somebody on mass transit or on the bus or whatnot, because most of us really, like, we don't really want to talk to people, we want to just get through our commute.
Yeah.
And you're in a position where if someone's talking to you and you don't like it, you can't really get away from them. So you're kind of stuck. So it's better to avoid, if possible, like trying to hit on someone on the bus unless they're obviously looking to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And you can usually tell the people who are, because they're the ones who are kind of looking around or they're not paying attention to anything in particular. But when you've got someone who's got their headphones on or they're, you know, face down in their phone or in a book or whatnot, those are all pretty universal do not disturb signs.
So, yeah, that's actually... So these days... I guess aside from maybe meeting someone on the internet through like social media, do you find a lot of people find it almost impossible to meet a stranger?
A lot of people who are afraid to try because they feel like they worry that they're going to creep someone out or they're going to do something wrong.
Which is the bulk of my issues.
Yeah, but there are a lot of ways to meet someone that isn't just an online dating. And sometimes, you know, part of it is that we've gotten so used to the idea that you're supposed to meet somebody at random through what I call a cold approach, where you have no connection. And that's really, really recent for us.
Yeah.
Most of the time, even the concept of dating is relatively recent. It's barely 100 years old.
Yeah.
At least in the way that we think of it, rather than, you know, courting someone where it's this long process that automatically leads to marriage. Most of the time, we meet significant others through the places where we spend the most time. So we meet a lot of people from, you know, at church or through friends or through work. And we just don't, we've started kind of invalidating that idea because we've gotten, I think some of it may just be because of pop culture, because pop culture has taught us the meet cute where you find the stranger and either you bump into each other and have this instant spark or you go up and approach them and, you know, win them over with your wit and charm. It is the right way to do it. There's all kinds of ways of doing it. It's just, different personality types have ways that work better for them.
Yeah.
Like, some people are good at cold approach. Some people are very charismatic at meeting people who with no social connection whatsoever. Other people do a lot better if they're, you know, at the Barnes & Noble and they see someone browsing the magazines and just casually starting up a conversation. It's like, oh, hey, you know, what did you think about this? Or just starting, really just making an observation and the other person responding and then you just... you know, start to talk back and forth, and before you know it, you've been having a conversation, and you kind of stop and say, you know what, I'm having a really good time talking to you, but I've got to go, could we continue this elsewhere, could I buy you coffee?
See, I've found when I worked at the Apple store and it was my job to talk to people, it would occur to me so many times, like, I'm good at talking to people. It's talking to strangers. I'm comfortable. It's no big deal because it's my job. When I'm out in a social setting, I find it much more difficult. I don't really know why.
Because you've got a set of rules that tells you how you can engage with people and when. And when you don't have that, then there's that worry that you're going to annoy someone, that you're going to be creepy, that you're going to do something wrong. And most of the time, that's not the worst that's going to happen is the person's just going to ignore you.
Right.
The big thing for me is I would say just if you're really wanting to talk to someone, consider the social context. The rules of behavior that dictate where you are change. I mean, it's when you're at Starbucks, it's considered acceptable to kind of just, you know, casually talk with the people you're in line with as you're waiting for your drinks. Or to somebody who's clearly, you know, who's not working, who's just hanging out and spending time. On the other hand, you know, just randomly approaching somebody on the street. I've known people in the pickup artist scene who are good at doing that, but that is not even varsity level approaching. That's Olympic level approaching, because most of the time people who are wandering on the street are trying to get by their day.
Right.
And they've already, especially if they're in certain parts of town, have been either they've been hit on or catcalled, or they've got, you know, people outside the restaurants and stores and bars or whatnot, like going through a gauntlet of carnival barkers. And they don't want to be bothered by, you know, the next line in the long line of assholes who's trying to get their number, trying to get them to buy something.
Yeah.
So the social context says, you know, you can talk to somebody, but you better have a damn good reason. Whereas if you're at a bar, obviously depending on the bar, because some bars are more social, some are just you're there to drink in quiet desperation. But the general rule is socializing is part of what you're there for, that it's expected that your people are going to try to start a conversation with you. And so those are areas where, yeah, the rules say, no, yes, go talk to somebody. And if they're not interested in you, they will either be very polite and give you the signals to go away, or they'll just not ignore you entirely. And that's when you just kind of chalk it up to, okay, they weren't into me. Great, now I know. Now I can move on to someone who will be interested in me.
Yeah. It's good advice. I'll try to work on that. Michael, anything you've got coming up soon? Or?
I think I'm going to try and do a tattoo convention in Tampa come around September.
Nice.
Of course, Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
God, I'm counting down. I can't wait.
It's probably not too early to talk about that yet, because who knows when we'll get time to record again. We'll probably record another episode or two before
we'll
Fantastic Fest.
Podcast at Fantastic Fest. It'll be fun.
We could, yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because there's always a day where I'm just like, I don't want to see movies today.
my buddy Matt will be in town. I'm sure he's down to like chit-chat about movies, and I've tattooed him for numerous years. So
nice. Yeah, we can definitely do that. What's going on with you upcoming? Or?
The big thing for me coming up is September 2nd through the 4th. I'm going to be at Baltimore Comic Con, and I'm going to have some, hopefully if everything works out well with the supplier, I'm going to have some new merch to debut that's going to be really cool. I'm going to have a couple of surprises. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice. Cool. So that'll about do it for this episode of The Tattoo Shop. You can find me on Twitter at JCDeLeon1. The Tattoo Shop has a Twitter handle. It's Tattoo Shop Pod. You can follow Michael on Instagram at Bearded Gentleman, not Gentleman. He's also on Twitter, ATX Tattooer. Harris, on Twitter, you are...
I'm Dr. Nerd Love, DR Nerd Love, and you can find my Facebook page for the website on facebook.com/DR Nerd Love.
Cool. Awesome. So until next time, Harris, thank you so much for coming out
on
the pod. We will catch you guys in the shop next episode.